Welcome to the Sanity Podcast. My name is A.R. Hoffman, and every week, my co-host, Rebecca Sugar, and I speak to the people that you want to hear from.
We're joined today by Paul Dreyer from Manhattan Institute. He's the city's policy analyst at Manhattan Institute, with a focus on urban policy issues that affect New York City and New York State. So lots to talk about today. Thank you for coming.
It's great to be here.
I really can't imagine a better time to be thinking about New York policy, right? Obviously, the elephant in the room is the mayoral race, but we're really excited to dive into the nuts and bolts with Paul today.
Okay, so we should start, Paul, with just what is a sanctuary city? Are we one in New York? And just outline for us what laws are in place that define us as a sanctuary city.
Well, a sanctuary city, in essence, is a municipality, could also be a state, could also be a county that refuses to work with the federal government on immigration issues. It could be limited to, not working with the government on non-criminal illegal immigrants, those who haven't committed crimes here. Immigration is a civil offense. And New York, in essence, is not just a sanctuary city, but a sanctuary state. There are a couple laws, mostly from the de Blasio administration, passed during the late Obama years, early Trump years, that kind of shifted New York into its sanctuary city status, such as Local Law 58, which prohibits federal immigration authorities from having an office on Rikers Island, which I know is a big subject these days. Also, Local Law 2486, limiting the Department of Corrections from cooperating on ICE detainers unless the individual has been convicted of serious and violent crimes. So there's clearly a reason for this carve out. And then there's another law doing the same thing for the NYPD.
So just to be, just to drill down so I understand it, it sounds like sanctuary city or sanctuary state is similar to like hate speech. Mm-hmm. It's a sort of a colloquial term that we use to capture the spirit of something. It's not a legal term. There's no such thing really in the law.
Not specifically. It's just a name to help categorize policy.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so this is sort of a federalism issue, right? So constitutionally, there's the federal government and the states, and municipalities are kind of offshoot of that division. So when we talk about cooperation versus obstructing, is that a meaningful difference, right? I mean, the Constitution does give states the police power, right? It does give them the ability to kind of enforce their own criminal code. So where does the rubber meet the road here? So when you say not cooperate with ICE, is that kind of, you know, hiding files? Is that standing in the street, you know, saying you shall not pass? What does that actually look like?
Speaking for New York specifically, it's more like the city is has these criminal migrants up in Rikers, mm-hmm. and just won't tell the federal government that they're there, so they can't just pick them up at the gate. So they're more not working with them specifically, mm-hmm. but you know, there are definitely other cases where rogue elected officials, such as that, I forgot the name of that judge, will break the law in order to help illegal immigrants.
Right, the one in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So a person who's here illegally could commit an armed robbery, mm-hmm. be arrested, maybe they land in Rikers or some other facility, and the feds will never know that they're there and that they're illegal. They have illegal status. So that's the essential problem.
It's possible there are carve-outs for certain serious/violent crimes. So it's entirely possible that they might not get noticed. But for the large majority of people who convict less serious crimes, and keep in mind that phrase is a little arbitrary.
Mm-hmm. Also a term of art, right? What is a violent crime?
What is a violent crime? Let's say someone commits a murder and nobody has to guess if it was a violent crime and they're illegal. What percentage of the time in New York is that person referred to ICE or to the federal government?
There's no specific data on that, as the Department of Corrections is notoriously hard to get FOIL, Freedom of Information Act, requests from. But there's no way of knowing, which is the most scary part.
and they don't volunteer it. You have to file something to actually go and find out. But there's nobody on this end calling up the feds and saying, hey, we have a murderer who's from Venezuela.
Well, for instance, there was a case a couple months ago of Venezuelan gang members with a, I think it was a weapons charge. And, it got thrown out of court, maybe on a technicality or something like that. And ICE had no way of knowing that they were even there in the first place. It might have been thrown out of court, but at least they should know. Maybe these are the people that we should be targeting and removing first. Mm-hmm. The people, involved in the gangs and the frequent arrests and the weapons charges.
One story I've covered a little bit, just really scratched the surface of in our paper, is the effort by the Trump administration, the DOJ, to push back on some of this non-cooperation, specifically around this driver's license issues, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the city council passed this rule that the DMV, which actually is, and everyone hates the DMV, but actually it's sort of really important here, right? In terms of like where is their information, where is their registration, is shielded from or barred from, I'm not sure, providing that information to ICE. So is that, I know that, Letitia James has made that, one big point of confrontation. So, is that either maybe if you know of that case in particular, or just general, kind of how is the federal government and New York kind of wrestling around these issues?
Well, with the green light law, right. I'm not exactly sure what's happening on that. I'm pretty sure it's being litigated right now. Mm-hmm. Whole thing is completely insane, but I think if, say, we get a Zorin as mayor and he continues resisting ICE as much as he can, which...
And just to be clear, the latest polling out this morning shows a very tight race.
Yes.
And we'll talk about that on our podcast, but yeah.
It would be against Zorin's interest to resist ICE even more because the Trump administration has taken off the gloves. He could risk... losing federal funding to the city for certain block grants, which is entirely possible. Like going back to the Wisconsin judge, they will definitely prosecute elected officials that help break the law to help illegal aliens. Yeah. And definitely more of these large
scale. This is a fight the administration would love to have, I'm sure. Yeah. I'd just love to have. But on the other hand, I don't, have someone of Zoran's political commitments.
He would love to have it too.
He would love to have it too.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And definitely more of these large scale ICE courthouse raids, such as I think it was a teenager in the Bronx that made the news specifically. When the city won't share information to ICE about who's a criminal migrant, ICE has no way of knowing. They have no map of who to go to, what names to find. So they just go and start getting everybody in these courthouse-style raids. And I know that a lot on the progressive side have been, very against this one instance of this teenager getting arrested. Mm-hmm. But if they just cooperated with ICE, more criminal migrants would be off the streets and less of these courthouse raids would happen.
Tom Homan has brought that up. He said, if you don't help us, we're just going to go in and sweep and you're going to lose more, of your illegal immigrants in these raids.
I know in that green light law case, Pam Bondi has argued that, the city is crossing that line from passive resistance to active obstruction.
Right. Well, that's what I want to ask about because I love the details here and I want to really understand it. Is it just I won't help? What if I'm a city official and I know that that murderer is an illegal from Venezuela? Can I call up the feds independently and say he's here? Are you actually barred by the law from doing that?
You are very strictly barred from doing that, especially if, say, you're in the NYPD and you arrest somebody. You could, flat out lose your job for doing something like that.
Okay. And can I, if I see it happening and I somehow know that that's an illegal immigrant, can I call up as a whistleblower, as just a private citizen and say, I know that that guy is down at precinct such and such and he's been arrested?
I'm not exactly sure what ICE would do with that information, but if you don't work for the city, you're probably free to do that.
Okay. I just want to know how far these laws take this sanctuary sort of idea.
So speaking of, jumping on that question, we were speaking off camera a little bit. Okay, so we get that who's mayor matters, clearly. And we have this kind of muddled choice.
Muddled. But, that was kind.
Okay. But But who's actually, I mean, is this a decision of the city council? Is this, this whole policy medley, I mean, is it coming from Albany? I mean, does changing the mayor matter? Where actually is the kind of locus of authority vis-a-vis immigration policy for the city?
Well, I'd say that the city council keeps a lot of these laws in place. They haven't really passed new ones lately because I think they're a little afraid of the new Trump administration. The state has the state sanctuary policies. And what the mayor could do specifically is I'm sure you heard about the ICE on Rikers Island, that whole deal. They could, like the first deputy mayor, issue an executive order that goes against the local law that forbade them from being on Rikers to begin with. But that's a little more complicated because it's never been done before. It's being litigated right now. And there's another curveball thrown in the whole Rikers situation. Rikers is now under a federal receivership.
I was gonna ask about
because
that,
of, yeah. you know, years of issues. Mm-hmm. Personally, like my Manhattan Institute colleagues, I think it's a great idea. It gives Rikers a chance to start over again. And maybe we don't need all these borough-based jails.
But does that make it under federal jurisdiction vis-a-vis immigration if it's under federal receivership in terms of administration?
Well, interestingly enough, it's under a Clinton appointee, federal judge Laura Taylor Swan, who constrains the mayor's authority on jail operations. So it will ultimately be up to her. And I think we might have an idea of which way she might go because of who appointed her.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, so back to the details. If a new mayor is elected and they have all these concerns about the Trump administration and what they might do, but they also have a sort of left-wing base, they still have a city council that will do what they want to do. So would any mayor matter in terms of changing these policies short of a Republican coming in, which we don't expect in New York? Would any of the current potential candidates matter? And maybe I'm not only asking that, would they potentially make the problem better? Who in that list do you think could make it much worse? And what would much worse even look like?
Well, to start off with that, I think the strongest person on immigration is the incumbent, right, Eric Adams, because he would continue his current policy of attempting to reopen ICE access at Rikers, or at least put pressure on the federal judge. Right. I think the second strongest.
Can I just jump in on Adams there? I mean, you know, as a city watcher, I mean, have you, you know, we all know about the brouhaha over the bribery charges, them being dropped, the U.S. attorney, acting U.S. attorney Danielle Sassoon, alleging a quid pro quo between the administration and Adams, where charges are dropped for stricter immigration reform. Does the record kind of reflect that? I mean, has Adams had a kind of, you know, Saul on the road to Damascus conversion moment on immigration? I mean, in the past, let's say 6 months, a year, has there been a dramatic shift in New York's immigration policy from Gracie Mansion?
Well, I think the biggest shift is after he appointed Randy Mastro, yeah, who was in the Giuliani administration, yeah, as first deputy mayor, and they began the ICE access executive order, even though that's frozen right now. I think he also saw, Adams saw himself, the tail end of the migrant crisis. Not only that, but the opportunity the new administration brings. That being said, though, the second best person would be Cuomo, despite, you know, signing state-level sanctuary EOs back in the day when he was governor. Mm-hmm. He might be a little bit more pragmatic than his progressive challengers, as he's trying to keep the Democratic Party from going full-blown socialist, mm-hmm, like Zorin.
Mm-hmm. I haven't been following this Cuomo's sort of platform in the last couple of weeks, but has he ramped up this immigration conversation to his own benefit?
I don't think any of the candidates for mayor want to talk about this because not only do they risk alienating themselves from the more progressive wings, right, you know, the people from Astoria, mm-hmm, whatnot, they are afraid of the federal government coming after them. losing federal funding, like I said before. But public opinion has shown that 79% of New Yorkers support deporting illegal immigrants convicted of crimes. So I truly believe the best policy for the next mayor is to just focus on deporting illegal immigrants convicted of crimes.
And that's any crimes.
Yep. Anything else of people, you know, whose only civil offense is coming in here illegally would just not be the most efficient use of city resources.
Is that broken down by Democrat-Republican voters? Because that would affect the messaging during the primary.
I wish I had the rest of that poll on me.
Yeah.
But 48% of New Yorkers support backing the Trump administration's federal immigration enforcement efforts. Only 31% oppose.
Right. Yeah.
So it's kind of come to, like you said, the road to Damascus moment for New Yorkers on criminal migrants.
Mm-hmm.
Regular, you know, regular people who are not here legally, that's a different story.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you know, to just talk like, you know, politics for a second, because, you know, New York mayorally, at least in at this moment, wasn't always the case, of course, is sort of a one party show, you know. So it's a Democratic primary, but it's also basically, you know, the general election with that kind of ranked choice voting wrinkle thrown in there. So, you know, it's sort of tough maybe a little bit to gauge, you know, who's the audience. I mean, Cuomo's kind of basically running a kind of name recognition without much else campaign. I think the big question now is, it's clear that Cuomo is, I don't know, high 30s, low 40s. You know, is he going to stay there, or are we going to see a drop as, you know, as other people really go after him?
Right. Well, and I think
I think, just to jump in, I think one of the sort of a variable here is AOC's endorsement. And so far she hasn't endorsed Soran, but I can see a kind of last minute endorsement.
As he's growing in the polls, as he's gaining more and more potentially likely. Yeah. But so if Soran were to win, even though you've said that anybody would be sort of concerned about the Trump administration's blowback, are there things that someone like him, he could do that could make the situation even worse than it is now and still sort of avoid Trump's ire? Like, are you worried? Would it make a difference whether he's the mayor or Cuomo's the mayor in terms of this one particular issue?
Well, I don't think there's anything specific worse he could do that the city isn't already doing that wouldn't
we're already at the bottom.
Yeah, that wouldn't cause the ire of Attorney General Pam Bondi. Mm-hmm. I think the worst thing he could do is
keep the status quo. I mean, Adams is hanging out at the White House every other week. I mean, clearly there's some sort of understanding between
how much worse could it get is what I'm trying to drive at if it were not Adams or somebody else.
Right.
Could it get worse, or are we really at the bottom of the barrel here and doing the worst job on deporting criminal illegal aliens? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think Adams is hamstruck by this, not only the lawsuit against him by the city council, but this federal receivership.
Yeah.
So it's the sort of thing where it's almost out of his control at this point. All he could do is put pressure on the judge and continue the lawsuit.
Maybe is another variable here, the sort of state context, right? I mean, you know, if there's some polling has shown really close race between a prospective Richie Torres candidacy and Kathy Hochul, and maybe even a Republican, you know, for 2026. So what role does this state politics have in terms of, you know, we know the famous fights between Cuomo and de Blasio and the, you know, the mayor of New York versus the governor of New York State. Is there any sense in which that could be another factor in terms of the immigration equation?
Well, I honestly don't see the state completely reversing course on its sanctuary policies. However, I could see somebody with more sense, like Richie Torres, potentially putting less pressure to protect things such as the green light law, the state one, just putting less pressure in general on the city to abide by, and maybe letting the federal government come in and start going after criminal migrants. An idea I had for a prospective governor that would be interested in assisting with this is New York State has a lot of closed jails right now that just sit there in upstate New York. Maybe a governor that wants to get tough on criminal migrants could let ICE use a few of them as staging grounds for people that they're deporting, and then also give these jobs back to these upstate communities that have been ravished by the prison closures under Kathy Hochul.
Well, you have written about certain counties, one of them in upstate New York, that has decided to work with ICE and that have done that. Mm-hmm. And I just, could you tell us about some of those examples and how are they getting past these sanctuary city laws and being helpful to ICE?
Well, specifically, they have no specific sanctuary laws that are hamstringing them. It's more they entered an agreement with the federal government. So far, Broome County, Niagara County, Nassau County, and the first, I'd like to add, Rensselaer County, are all cooperating with ICE under a 287G agreement.
Wait, what does that mean? Yeah. So they can bypass state policy to just work directly? How does that work?
Well, specifically, there's no state policy hamstringing what the counties can and can't do with their jails and their police force, because that's under, you know, the county sheriff, the county executive, and the police commissioner. 287G is an agreement that pretty much when an illegal immigrant is, say, arrested for DWI, they immediately let ICE know, and then ICE comes and picks them up whenever they're done being held. But some counties, such as Nassau under Bruce Blakeman, assign detectives to work directly with ICE. This program could be tailored to the resources of a specific county. Specifically, Rensselaer is smaller than Nassau County, so it doesn't need to assign detectives to work with ICE. All it needs to do is, you know, give ICE a shout out that there's an illegal immigrant in their jail. And I'd like to add that there's no data specifically yet on the effectiveness of this, but I think the best way to measure success on this is that not only it frees ICE resources up because they don't have to go out in the field and find these people all over again, but it keeps officers safe because when you think about it, you put somebody in jail, you give them directly over to ICE, or they could go back into a lot of these communities where people might be armed and might hurt officers. And not only officer safety, but waste ICE's time.
Yeah, it's interesting to think as the data shows of more counties moving to the right around New York, I certainly, you know, Nassau County is where my family lives, and I know a lot of Long Island also has shifted to the right, really all over the country, you know, whether you'll see more of these, you know, kind of shifts in policy or difference at a county level,
right?
You know, cooperating with
you almost
us.
Kind of imagine that these local law enforcement officers need to be trained in immigration policy just so they understand what they can and cannot do because it's so confusing and so divided up by county. I mean, are they aware of what, obviously they would be, right? But you'd have to initiate programs to train them in this kind of.
Well, specifically with Nassau County, they only, because of the liability surrounding it, there have been massive federal lawsuits regarding this, particularly in Suffolk County. Nassau has decided to handpick 10 detectives to cross-train in this law because it's a liability for them personally. Qualified immunity only goes so far. So I think that's the smartest move. Only pick a few officers, assign them to work with ICE, and they're cross-trained through DHS.
Yeah. If we're already at the bottom of the barrel in terms of being a sanctuary city, why hasn't the Trump administration and Attorney General Bondi gone in and done more so far? What are they waiting for?
I think they're just overwhelmed with starting this entire effort. It's on a massive scale right now. So I think they're just getting their footing and streamlining the whole deportation process.
Let me ask you, and I could be totally off base here, but you often see that, you know, under the Bush administration, under the Obama administration, you know, millions of people were deported. the state of affairs now, did something change around 2020, 2021 to sort of take away some of these tools, or has this always been the state of affairs? So I guess I'm saying if we went back to 2009 mm-hmm. and we were in New York City, let's say, would this be the kind of state of play, or would there have been more cooperation with the federal government, or how did we kind of get to this point?
Well, I think back in 2009, there would have been a lot more cooperation. Mm-hmm. I think that around the middle or towards the end of the Obama era, when the de Blasio era started in New mm-hmm. York, you know, the hashtag resist
right.
time period, it became less and less popular. And I think it's come full circle at the end of the migrant crisis. Mm-hmm. People are fed up with it, mm-hmm. especially, you know, office workers in Midtown. They're tired of these gangs of 14-year-old migrants, you know, harassing people, getting arrested and being mm-hmm. brought back on the street. Also because of the bail laws and the raise the age laws.
Can you just quickly tell the audience what those are?
The bail law, a lot of the people arrested in New York State don't need to be bailed out anymore mm-hmm. Unless it's a very serious offense. And the raise the age law complicates when minors are arrested.
Right. Mm-hmm. So can I ask you, there are a lot of hotels around the city that were housing these migrants and a lot of owners of hotels that were getting great contracts to house them. What's the status of that? Is that I think Ari and I were talking before that the Roosevelt Hotel.
Just around the corner from here.
Just around the corner, shut down. So what's happening with that? And is that a big piece of this puzzle, or is that just sort of a pinstrike?
Well, it's great that those hotels are finally cleared out with the end of the end of the migrant crisis. One positive thing for New York City residents is not only do they have to worry about no longer have to worry about the crime around them, but a large percentage of all city hotels were booked up by these migrants, which drove up the price in general throughout the city, which prohibited tourism a little bit.
Right. And so those are all cleared out now? Is it just the Roosevelt Hotel, or is it really citywide?
I'm not exactly sure. I'd have to check on that. But I know that the large-scale migrant camps, such as Creedmoor mm-hmm. and Roosevelt Island, I think in the last few days of the last materials being cleared out.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think you feel it less on the streets here, don't you?
Yeah.
I actually do, just anecdotally.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so basically we're describing kind of a 10-year or a decade shift from, like, you know, and I think as a broader thesis, something did shift in 2014, 15 around the culture, call it wokeness, call it a new political alignment, whatever. I certainly felt it. You know, and then we've gone through the kind of extreme and now we're sort of at the backlash. Would that be kind of the story you'd tell about immigrate over the last 10 years?
I'd say so. I'd say we've come full circle, especially with the criminal migrants, the sanctuary. Well, you could also call it the sanctuary crisis. Mm-hmm. The migrant crisis brought the city to its knees in a way, mm-hmm. both financially, crime-wise, and people were just exhausted of seeing it. Mm-hmm. And I think that the new administration breathing life into immigration efforts has kind of supercharged this attitude.
Mm-hmm. So, what do you project for the next few years of the Trump administration? And what are you doing at Manhattan Institute to offer? What policy initiatives or ideas are you offering to the administration?
I see the Trump administration streamlining deportation efforts over time. And then from there, going after sanctuary counties, states, to the best of its ability through its Attorney General, Pam Bondi. So I just see these efforts getting stronger and stronger over time. A lot of moving parts.
Do you worry a little bit that the administration, something we've spoken about on our program, is sort of picking these, you know, really difficult deportation cases, whether it's the use of the Alien Enemies Act or deporting, you know, green card holders? And, you know, do you see that as a distraction from the kind of systemic streamlining you're talking about? Or is that inevitable, that you're going to have these kind of test cases that will kind of rise to the public consciousness, and that the actual meat and potatoes work is going on, even as these sort of, you know, symbolic cases sort of take up a lot of the oxygen.
I think these test cases are inevitable, and they're doing so many different things at once right now to not only litigate some of the stuff that needs to be litigated, but streamline this whole process as quickly as possible. They're doing a lot of different things almost immediately. So, of course, we're going to have test cases where this pans out.
Is there anything that that Congress could be doing that it's not doing? There's a lot. But on this particular issue, my fear is that the administration, even if it does the best possible work in this domain, you know, their term will be over and a different administration could just simply do something else. Is there anything they can do to embed into law things that would help protect New York from becoming, well, from continuing on as it is or from descending into something worse? What would you recommend in terms of legislation?
I think they could strengthen the 287G laws, the, you know, the local federal partnership, to make it less likely that municipalities get sued for, you know, possible small mistakes with the program, because that is what keeps a lot of counties such as Suffolk out of the mix. The fear of a massive lawsuit wiping out the county budget, tying up county resources. So I think the fear of litigation is the main thing they need to remove.
For a long time, just to hop on Rebecca's point, you know, there was talk of bipartisan immigration reform. This was a big, you know, big thing. And Senator Lankford had an effort last year. I mean, is that something that you guys at the Manhattan Institute, do you guys support that? Do you think that's the right way to go about it? Or are you more interested in these sort of maybe more piecemeal or sort of granular kind of policy changes?
Personally, I don't speak for the whole institute. Personally, I'm more interested in streamlining the processes for removing criminal migrants in New York, you know, to meet the state where it's at specifically. You know, broader immigration reform is, of course, needed. And we'll definitely, we're not going to get it without some kind of deal.
Okay. Great. Paul, thank you so much for joining us and for teaching us. Really.
Yes, really appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you.